We're going to go in the footsteps of the current guard, though. This is a very interesting shear because it's, as I like to do, we go with practical application. And practical application means we try to find, use the archaeological evidence that we have to figure out what it looked like in ancient times. Unfortunately, it's been 1935 years, approximately, since the last time we had a vote in the Beis HaMikdash at all on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur was the highlight of the year. 2 days actually were the highlights of the year in the Beis HaMikdash, the Korban Pesach and Erev Pesach, which was for the individuals, while on Yom Kippur, the Avodah was for the Kohen Gadol, the High Priest. Now the Kohen Gadol had to prepare himself for this Avodah, which was not an easy Avodah. Don't forget that he was fasting. He had to do all the work himself, and he had to get it right, and it was very important because the kapara, the atonement for all of Klal Yisrael was dependent on this avodah. The Kohen Gadol started his preparation from 7 days before. That's why we chose to do it on this day. Normally, Tzom Gedaliah is actually 7 days before Yom Kippur, 7 days before. This year, Tzom Gedaliah is 1 day late, so we're actually Dalet Tishrei. But the beginning started on Gimel Tishrei, when the Kohen Gadol began his preparations. The Mishnah in Yomer says, and the Hebrews PDF source page, number 2, Shivas Yomim Kodem Yom Kippurim, Mafrishim Kohen Gadol Mibeso. 7 days before Yom Kippur, they escorted the Kohen Gadol from his house to the Lishkas Palhedrin, to the chamber that was in near the Beis HaMikdash, and that's where he will be spending his 7 days as preparation for Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, as we said, the highlight, and of course the highlight of that is him going into Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of the Holies, which he did not go in any other day of the year. And the preparation starts 7 days before. Now we're going to first discuss a little about the Kohanim Gedolim, what we know. If you take a look, we'll first start with the Kohen Gadol named Shimon HaTzadik. Take a look on the source pages, on the links page, links 7, 8, and 9. Send you to a cave which is in north Yerushalayim, a burial cave dating back to the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, traditionally the tomb of Shimon HaTzadik. Who was Shimon HaTzadik? Shimon HaTzadik was a Kohen Gadol at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash period. He's mentioned in Pirkei Avos. Shimon HaTzadik was Mishyorei Knesset HaGedolah. He was Mishyorei Knesset HaGedolah. He was the remainders of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. To remind you, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the Great Assembly, were around in the days of Mordechai Esther, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, and Shimon HaTzadik is shortly afterwards. If you go to the Hebrew source page, it tells us over here about a few stories about Shimon HaTzadik and the contrast to Kohanim Gedolim who came afterwards. I made a little mistake and I left out this source from the Hebrew source page. But the Hebrew source page, the Gemara tells us like this. The Gemara says that in the days of Shimon HaTzadik, when he did the performance in the Beis HaMikdash, he was a very righteous Kohen Gadol. He was a righteous Kohen Gadol. And when he did it, things went right. What does it mean, things went right? There were certain things that were not necessarily up to the Kohen Gadol. For example, there are two goats that are brought. One goat is slaughtered as a korban, and one is the scapegoat that's sent to Azazel, which we'll talk about later. In order to do this, the Kohen Gadol had to do a lottery. There were two lots. One of them said Hashem's name, one of them said Azazel. If you want to see an interesting picture, lottery box, please go to the last source on the last link, where it says lottery box, link number 15. And you see the box where it has the box called Kalpi, which means lottery box. And then you have two wooden things covered with metal, and the one open which says Azazel. The one that's closed has Hashem's name on it, and that's why it's closed. So people shouldn't print it by mistake. And the Kohen Gadol takes, at one time during the service, the Kohen Gadol takes the two these two lots out of the box. He doesn't see which one he takes. And he puts one on the right goat and one on the goat standing on his left. If he is a righteous Kohen Gadol, so then a miracle will happen, and he'll always get the one designated for a carbon, the one designated for Hashem, in his right hand. If he's not so righteous, so then it's 50% chance, to the right or to the left. So the Gemara tells us that the Shimon HaTzadik, he always got it right. He always got it in the right on the right side. The right side was always Hashem's name. But after that, the Kohanim Gadol already were not so righteous, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And it was a 50% chance. Another very interesting point was that the Kohen Gadol, was that there would be a red thread, which they would tie around the scapegoat or in the base of Mikdash. And if Klal Yisrael were worthy, they would see a miracle that it would turn white. And they would know that that's a sign that the Averis of Klal Yisrael, which were red, later turned white. In other words, they were atoned. If it didn't turn white, so then they knew that they weren't worthy. So the Gemara tells us that during the days of Shimon HaTzadik, it always turned white. Later on, it didn't happen like that. Why didn't it happen like that? Because we have different types of Kohanim Gedolim. And the Gemara tells us, and for this you go to Hebrew PDF source page number 5. I had to fix this little technical thing. Okay. Hopefully we took care of it now, and it will show up in a second. No. Okay. Okay, on the Hebrew source page number 5, it tells us Amar Rav Rabbanan Rav Yochanan Gemara Yom Daftes that yes, Hashem tells of Yomim, that the fear of Hashem gives people long life. Shnos Hashem Tiktona, but the years of Rishayim are shortened. And this, the Gemara tells us, talking about the difference, the contrast between the first Beis Hamikdash and the second Beis Hamikdash. In the first Beis Hamikdash, that stood 410 years, there were a total of 18, or according to the group, 11 Kohanim Gedolim. 11 Kohanim for 420 years. Figure each Kohen served for 30, 40 years. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, that stood for 420 years, you had over 300 Kohanim Gedolim. Of them, Shimon HaTzadik served for 40 years, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, 80 years, Yishmael ben Pabi, 11, Rabbi Elazar ben Chasam, also, 10 for Yishmael ben Pavi, 11 for Rabbi Elazar ben Chasam. It turns out that the Kohen Gadol did not serve for more than a year. And the rest of the Kohanim Gadolim, they didn't serve for more than a year. Every year, you had a new Kohen Gadol. Why was this? Because it turned out the Kohen Gadol in the second Beis HaMikdash became a political position. And the king used to appoint the Kohen Gadol whoever was to his liking. So he'd appoint the Kohen Gadol who was not worthy of it. And if he's not worthy of it, he won't live out the year. Whether he died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself or not, that we'll see later. But the bottom line was that he didn't live out the year. So we're going to start our preparation now, and we're going to follow the Kohen Gadol. There's a famous letter written by a Roman citizen who witnessed this procession of the Kohen Gadol going from his house to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's a very fascinating story. It's found in Rabbi Yaakov Emden Sitter, And it tells the story of 7 days before the special day called Yom Kippur. They prepared in the Kohen Gadol's house seats for the head of the Beis Din, the deputy Kohen Gadol, and the king. And then they all would come to his house and greet him and say, you have the responsibility to make sure that you do the Avodah right and you're mechaper for all of Klal Yisrael, and you have to do tshuva. And then they would, after this, they would announce which direction the Kohen Gadol would go to the special room in the Beis HaMikdash. The procession first came to the descendants of David HaMelech, and then after that, the young Kohanim, the Levim, and after that came the Kohen Gadol, and he would go to his chamber in the Beis HaMikdash. Let us see what a house of a Kohen Gadol looked like. So we're fortunate in today's day and age, archaeology helps us a little, and shortly after the Six-Day War, excavations were done in the Jewish quarter in the Old City. Now the Jewish quarter in the Old City was part of Yerushalayim in ancient times. In the second Beis HaMikdash, this section was called the Upper City of Jerusalem. Yerushalayim was divided basically into three parts. I don't have a good map to show you, but the three parts included the Upper City, the Lower City, and the Beis HaMikdash area. If you go to your link page, do we have it here? Link number three is a little picture of what's called the Upper City. This picture is taken from the famous model of the Holy Land Hotel in Yerushalayim. And this is what historian, archaeologist Aviona designed the Upper City. He designed it with massive houses, with streets crisscrossing at 90-degree angles. Basically a modern city, Roman, Greek city of the time. Interestingly, when you make a model of such as, especially on this scale, you have a big problem because you have to fill in, you can't leave any empty spaces. You have to make decisions. What materials do you use? What type of streets? What are the size of the houses? Etc. So interestingly, when he made this model at first, he was criticized for a lot of things. One of the things he was criticized was the fact that they had straight streets crossing at 90-degree angles, which means urban planning. And the second thing he was criticized for was that the size of the houses. They said the size of the houses that you made over here are just too big, and there's no way that in those days people had houses of such a magnitude. Now, he made this model in the early 60s when the old city was still in Jordanian hands. But 10 years later, the excavations begin, and then the truth surfaces. And in some things, he admitted that he was wrong, and in some things, it turned out he was right. When it came to the issue of whether or not there were straight streets meeting at 90-degree angles, it turned out that he was right. There had been urban renewal 100 years before the end of Yerushalayim, before the end of the Second Beis HaMikdash. They knocked down all the houses and made straight streets. When it came to the issue of the size of the houses, there he was wrong. Why was he wrong? Because it turned out that the houses were even bigger than he had built on the model. Now, what he had been criticized that they're too big is that they weren't even big enough. So the people in the Upper City, had lived comfortably. Who are these people? We can imagine it's the aristocratic people of Yerushalayim. One of the houses that was excavated is a house today known as Burnt House. For some information on Burnt House, there are two sites, link number four. Link number four will take you to, gives you a lot of information about the Burnt House, which we'll talk about in a moment. And what's interesting about Burnt House was a house that was destroyed by the Romans right after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, and a month later the Upper City was captured and was destroyed by the Romans on the 8th of Elul. In this house, where the evidence of the destruction and the burning was clear-cut, they found a bunch of household utensils, which we'll talk about and focus about in a moment, and they found a very interesting stone weight. Now, in order to see the stone weight clearly, go to link number four, and there are three pictures on this page. Ignore the first one, because that's not relevant for us. The second picture is what the Burnt House looks like today, if you go there. part of the utensils have been reconstructed, and we're going to talk about the utensils in a moment. And underneath it, you see a sketch of a stone weight, which has the inscription, the Bar Katros. The Bar Katros, meaning from the belonging to Katros. So who is this Katros? A very interesting piece on our Hebrew source page number one, but you have it here on this link in the English page, Pesachim 9 Daf, Nun Zion 57. It mentions like this. It talks about the Kohanim Gedolim in the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. It says like this. Oili mi Beis Baitos. Woe to me from the house of Baitos. Oili mi Olosan. Woe from their staff, from their sticks. In other words, the people of Baitos' family were violent people. Oili mi Beis Chanan. Woe from the family of Chanan. Oili mi Lechishosan. From the whispering. Oili mi Beis Katros. Woe to me from the house of Katros. Oili mi Kumusan. From the woe to me from the pens, because of the pens. And the last one is Oili mi Beis Yishmael ben Piachi or Piabi, who Shaim Kohanim Gedolim, their Kohanim Gedolim of Nim Gizbarim, their sons have high jobs, also their treasurers. The Chasneim and the son-in-laws are Makalin, are general managers. V'Avdeim Choftim is Amber Makalos, and the servants are beating the people with sticks. In other words, this is a reflection of what Kohanim Gedolim were at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. So first, when at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, when are these Kohanim Gedolim? So it's interesting. Is, for example, Baitos, we know for sure is a Kohen Gadol at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. Hanan, we can identify with a Kohen Gadol mentioned in Josephus, also killed at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. Yishmael ben Pabi, surely we know from Josephus and other sources he was a Kohen Gadol at the end of the second Beis HaMikdash. We can assume Katros as well was a Kohen Gadol at that time. Now, why are there so many Kohanim Gadol? Usually the way it goes is a Kohen Gadol, he serves until he dies, and when he dies, he appoints another one. And here we're talking about four Kohanim Gedolim who are living at the same time. And, okay, it may not be evident from the quote of the Gemara, but we know from Josephus and other sources that these Kohanim Gedolim are all living at the same time. So how did you have Kohanim Gedolim living at the same time? And the answer is in the Sefer Yoma that, that it got to an extent that the king every year would appoint a new Kohen Gadol. Even if the Kohen Gadol is still alive, he'd appoint a new Kohen Gadol. Why? Because that's the way to support his treasury. You want to be Kohen Gadol, you have to pay. So you did your service 1 year, now it's time for someone else. So all these four Kohanim Gadolim are living at the same time, and probably even more than that. We know the Medrash tells us, a very interesting, the Sefer tells us a story about a Kohen Gadol who died, and a potential Kohen Gadol sent his son with a basket full of silver to run to the king and give it to the king, so that the king should appoint him Kohen Gadol. On the way, he bumps into another person who's the son of another potential Kohen Gadol, and he sees him coming with a basket full of gold. And then he realizes that he doesn't stand a chance already. So this stone weight of Katros tells us that this is the house of a Kohen Gadol. So what were we expecting in the house of a Kohen Gadol? First of all, the Kohen Gadol, as we said, had to be rich. He had to be rich because in order to appoint him, he had to be rich. But also, in those days, he'd be rich because otherwise he won't get appointed. I just want to point out another picture. Go to link number 10. It's not just the quality of the picture is not so great. I apologize. But you look at these, the lighting in the, this is a showcase in the burnt house itself. And the two types of utensils over here. The bottom is clay jars, which is typical clay. The top are stone cups. Now these stone cups are very interesting phenomena. And they only surface in the end of the second Beis HaMikdash and in Jewish places. Why is this? Because when you live in Yerushalayim and you're a Kohen, you have to be very careful with the laws of Tumah and Tahara, with purity and impurity. And if a person is impure and he touches a clay piece of pottery, a clay pot, so then the only way to purify it is to break it. And after a while, you know, you keep on breaking this pottery, which is clay pottery is pretty scarce in Jerusalem because they didn't manufacture pottery directly in Jerusalem. So it became very expensive. And instead they started manufacturing these stone utensils. Now stone utensils are much more complicated to manufacture. You have to cut them out of the rock. and you have to dig and scrape them, so they're more expensive. But in the long run, since the stone does not become tummy, the stone is a natural form, it does not become tummy, so therefore then you're going to save money. So in the Caragallo's house, as in pretty much every other house in the Jewish quarter, you will find stone utensils aside with the clay pottery and mikvahs. I don't have a picture of a mikvah here, but in houses in the Jewish in the upper city, there are houses that are found with 6 and 7 mikvahs, and you assume that the Kohen Gadol had a mikvah in his house, and there are plenty of mikvahs in the Beis HaMikdash also and right outside. So the Kohen Gadol begins his procession from this house, and he starts walking. Now on the way, there's another site in Yerushalayim today, a modern site, which is called the Temple Institute, Machon HaMikdash. And this is an institute that is making kelim for the third Beis HaMikdash, reconstructing kelim the way they used to be. If you go to the to our link page, I brought up from this site. First of all, the lottery box, which I brought before, was on the site. And I brought up two pictures over here. Link number 13 will take you to the way they designed the Kohen Gadol. I'm not going to go into the full detail because we really don't have the time. But the Kohen Gadol, on an average day, wore 8 begadim, 8 garments. One is conspicuously missing here, the tzitz, because it has Hashem's name on it. So again, they didn't want it. You see the meal, the blue tunic. You see the ephod and the choshen, which has the 12 stones. This is what a Kohen Gadol wore on an average day. If you did any avoda in the Beis HaMikdash without these garments, so then the avoda is disqualified. But on Yom Kippur, I'll go now to link number 14. On Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would not enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He would not enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim wearing golden garments. He would only be wearing linen garments. Linen garments are what an average Kohen, a Kohen Hedi, or the normal Kohen, wore every day. But the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur wore these too. Of course, they were much nicer and very expensive. They were imported from Egypt, as the mission describes. The 4 beautiful linen garments, which you can see over here, which include the pants, which are not visible, the kasonis, the tunic, the belt, the avnate, and the mitznefes, which is the hat. This is again from the Temple Institute site, where they have made these garments, and they are not easy to make. They have to be woven from strings which are woven from each thread is woven from 6 threads. They have an interesting design, intricate design, and there's very little needlework, for example, on the tunic. Not easy at all. The first set of these garments to make cost about $5,000. So this is what the Kohen Gadol would wear. These are special begadim that he would wear on Yom Kippur when you go into Kodesh HaKadoshim. We continue our tour going into the famous Kotel tunnels. The famous Kotel tunnels run alongside the western side of the Har HaBayis. The Kohen Gadol will come to his chambers in the Beis HaMikdash. Will come to his chambers in the Beis HaMikdash. If you want to see a model of what the Beis HaMikdash would look like, please go to link number 12. This is a beautiful model, also from the Holy Land Hotel in Yerushalayim, soon to be in the Israel Museum. This is a model of the Beis HaMikdash, the way it looked like. You are facing it from the east, which was the entrance. Today, when you come to the Kotel, for example, you face it from the west, so you're actually standing behind the Beis HaMikdash. But here, you're facing it from the east. This is a model of what the Beis HaMikdash looked like. The Kohen comes to the Beis HaMikdash, and he spends the 7 days in preparation before he actually goes into the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We continue our tour. Go to link number 11. And this is in the Kotel tunnels itself, the sign. On the on top, which is a little hard to read, says that you are now standing opposite the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the Eben HaShisiyah was. What is the Eben HaShisiyah? In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the first place of Mikdash, the Ark of the Covenant, the Aron, was there, and in the Aron were the Luchos and the Sefer Torah. But towards the end of the first place of Mikdash, the Aron was taken away and hidden, because King Yoshio realized that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed and he didn't want the Aron taken, he hid the Aron. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Aron. The Mishnah tells us in Yoma, and this I didn't print it on your Hebrew source page, in Yoma and Gimel, it says when the Aron was taken, there was a stone in Kodesh HaKadoshim that's called Shasiyah. That's the stone that the world was created from. Now, if you want to see that stone, you go to link number two, the rock, the rock, a little large picture. And this is a very interesting picture. You're looking now from a building which is standing on the Har Bais, on the Temple Mount, which is called the Dome of the Rock. It's an octagonal building, and it has two rows of pillars. And in the center, you see this, over here it looks black, but it's not really such a black rock. There's a rock that protrudes from the surface. This is the highest point on the Har Habayis today, and traditionally has been known as the site of where the Kodesh HaKadoshim was. Now today, it's a little more exposed than it used to, so therefore it's a little larger than the size of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The picture is taken from the top, looking down, maybe a little confusing at first. And this is believed to be the Eben HaShisiyah, as I said, the highest point on the mountain, the rock protruding from the floor of the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Radbaz tells us that this is, for sure, the Makom of the Kodesh HaKadosh. What did the Kohen Gadol do in the Kodesh HaKadosh? So he went in there four times. Twice he went in, once with the blood of the Par, and once with the blood of the Sar, of the goat. The third time, which actually is the first time that he went in, is the highlight. He went in with the Ketores. Normally the Ketores, the incense, you are makir of the Ketores on the Mizbeach inside the Hechel. But on Yom Kippur you also bring it into Kodesh HaKadosh. That was the highlight. The Kohen Gadol will come into Kodesh HaKadosh. In his right hand he'll be carrying a pan full of coals. In his left hand he'll be carrying a pan with Ketores, and when he gets to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he'll put down the pan with the coals, scoop up the Ketores in his hands, and put it on the on the coals. And after that, he will leave the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Gemara tells us, and for this, I quoted you again in the Hebrew source page number 9. But the Gemara says, "Alma Ketores mechaper alashon hara." Ketores is mechaper. Ketores is mechaper on Lashon Hara. The Chofetz Chaim points out a very interesting thing. You can imagine the Kohen Gadol is at the highlight of the Avodah. He's going into Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. And what Avera can prevent him from doing the Kapara of Klal Yisrael? And that is the Avera of Lashon Hara. So we see over here how powerful Lashon Hara can be. So the Kohen Gadol goes in, he puts the Ketores on, and then he says a short tefillah, and he walks out. Why does he say a short tefillah and not a long tefillah? So Chazal tell us because we're afraid that if we'll say a long tefillah, the people will get worried that perhaps something happened to him in Kodesh HaKadosh. Now we mentioned before that the Kohen Gadol in the second Beis HaMikdash was not worthy, he won't live out the year. It's not clear if he died directly in the Kodesh HaKadosh or not. But this Gemara would seem to imply that he indeed died in Kodesh HaKadosh. That's why lo yamarach b'tfila, he didn't say a long tfila, he said a short tfila, so that the people shouldn't get worried. What was the tfila? A very interesting tfila. Not something that we would think. If we ask us what the tfila should be for the Kohen Gadol and Kodesh HaKadosh, I'm not sure what we would suggest. But he davened for rain, and that Am Yisrael should not need parnosa from each other, meaning that there should be prosperity. And one more thing is that when a person's traveling and it's raining and he's davening for the rain to stop, Hashem should not accept his tefillah because the people need the rain. So even though this person's davening for it to rain to stop, don't Hashem should not accept that tefillah. It's a short tefillah, and the Gemara also tells us in the Hebrew source page number 11 that there was one Kohen Gadol that started saying a long tefillah, and the people outside got worried. Maybe he died. And they decided maybe we'll go in and get him. And just as they were about to go in, he walked out. So they told him, why did you daven such a long tefillah? So he says, do you feel bad that I davened that the Beis HaMikdash should not be destroyed? So he said, please, but don't do it anyway, because we know that we saw in the Mishnah, don't say a long tefillah. Chazal tell us, Tosfos already brings up the Shalmi, that this was none other than Shimon HaTzadik. But we see that Kohanim Gedolim sometimes will not make it outside the Kodesh HaKadosh. There's a common story that they would tie a rope around the Kohen Gadol's feet, so that if he died in Kodesh HaKadosh, we'd be able to pull him out. After years of hunting for the source is indeed found in the Zohar. That's the source for the story. We have another story that tells us that there was a Kohen Gadol who was a Tzaduki. And without going into full details, the Tzadukim and the Purushim had different views on how the Avodah was supposed to be done. And even though Kohen Gadol was a Tzaduki, but he always followed the Purushim tradition, except for one, and he did it the wrong way, and a Malach came and thumped him on his head, and he died right there and then in Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Kohen Gadol goes into Kodesh HaKadoshim. You can imagine the trepidation, the fear. In the Tefillah of Yom Kippur, we mentioned Emes Maneda Hayakorein Gadol B'Teisa Meitzkosh HaKadoshim B'Sholem B'Lom Fega. How fascinating, how beautiful was the image of the Kohen Gadol coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim when nothing happened to him. So in other words, the Python again writes, in other words, it's expected that if something happened, it would happen then. And if he made it out alive, that would be the most fascinating thing to see. There's a whole Python, the whole thing in the order of the Aleph Beis, describing how fascinating it was to see the Kohen Gadol. One more thing was the Kohen Gadol, one more avodah, which we unfortunately don't have pictures for, but maybe next time, is a very interesting avodah called the Sari Lazozah. In English, it's called the scapegoat. Now, this is a goat, the two goats that are brought, and we make the lottery, and one goat is a karban, hachapan am Yisrael, and the other goat is sent with a person out to the desert, to the Judean desert, to be thrown off a cliff. A very strange avodah. Chazal tell us that the two avodos that the goyim say to am Yisrael, what is this strange thing you do? And the two of them are the paraduma and the sarlazosa. The Ramban says that what they have in common as that they're both not done in the Beis HaMikdash. The Paradum is done on Har Zeisim, and the Sar Lazozo is thrown over a cliff in the Judean desert. So in other words, the Goyim are saying, okay, you do a vote in the Beis HaMikdash, fine. But what is this outside thing? What is the significance of this goat? Now, Azazo today is commonly identified as a place called Jebel Mundar. The Mishnah gives a distance of this cliff from Yerushalayim. It's a little hard to measure because there's different opinions in the Mishnah how far exactly it was. And B, we don't know the exact route he took. But basically, this mountain is within the range of what's mentioned in the Mishnah, and topographically it makes a lot of sense that that's indeed the thing. The person would take the goat and walk in the heat, and Yom Kippur can be hot in Eretz Yisrael, and he's probably walking barefoot, keep in mind. And on the way, there'd be 10 stops where they would offer him food and drink if he needed. And Chazal said he never needed it, but it was just psychological. So that, it was just psychological, so that he'll know that if he needs it, he's okay. And therefore, he'll never need it. And he'd walk out and throw the goat over the cliff. Now, P, Kabbalah, and other sources, this goat is actually going to the Satan. It's going to the powers of Tumah. It's going to the powers of evil. In other words, we're basically silencing the Satan on Yom Kippur by giving him this goat. One more avodah which was done, I can't say an avodah, but one more thing which was done outside the Beis HaMikdash was the burning of the remains of the Par and the Sar. They were burned outside the Machneh, outside the camp. It was such a big attraction. Keep in mind, in those days, people didn't spend the whole Yom Kippur in shul. And one of the big attractions was to see the burning of the Par and the Sar in the Beis HaDeshen. Now, we know what this Beis HaDeshen is, because the Beis HaDeshen has been discovered. The Beis HaDeshen has been discovered about 100 years ago, outside, not far from Shar Shechem. So we know where this Beis HaDeshen is. And the Tosefta tells us that there were so many people there that you needed Kohanim to stand in a circle around the fire so as to prevent people from falling into the fire. It's getting a little late, and I just want to finish off with a very interesting thought and a very interesting story. The Kohen Gadol would walk out of the Beis HaMikdash on Matzah Yom Kippur, and if we'll quote the letter from the Roman citizen, he talks about the glory of how he went into the Beis HaMikdash 7 days before. But he says, this took place when he entered. However, when he left, the honor he received was double as much. For all the people in the Shalayim passed before him. Most of them are torches of flaming white wax. All wore white clothes. All the windows were decorated with embroidery and full of lights. The Kohanim told me that many years the Kohen Gadol couldn't reach his house before midnight because of the great numbers of people who came and the great congestion. Even though the people were all fasting, they would not go to the houses till they tried to reach and kiss the hands of the Kohen Gadol. So to see the Kohen Gadol, to see him come out and to greet him was a fascinating thing. But I'm going to finish off with a story and a thought that we have. And unfortunately, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash today. We repeat in the Yom Kippur Musaf, Chazaras HaShas, we repeat the Seder Avodah so that our saying should be as if we were Makir the Korbanos. But the story the Gemara tells us, and the Hebrew source, page number 8. Tanu Rabbanan, Ma'aseh b'Kohen Gadol she'yatzeh min Beis HaMikdash. V'aviyazu kol ha'am b'Asrei. The Kohen Gadol was walking out of the Beis HaMikdash and everyone was following him. Kivun dechazyunu l'shmai v'avtalyon, shavku l'didei v'ozi v'ozi shmai v'avtalyon. As the Kohen Gadol is walking home and everyone and the crowds and the thousands are greeting him, all of a sudden they bump into Shmai and Avtalyon. Shmai and Avtalyon are the leaders of the Jewish people, the Nasi and the Abbez, the big Talmid HaChachamim. So who's more important? The Kohen Gadol or Talmid HaChachamim? So the Talmid HaChachamim are more important. Shavku l'didei v'ozi v'ozi shmai v'avtalyon. So the people left the Kohen Gadol and went to Shmai v'avtalyon. Naturally, the Kohen Gadol wasn't too happy with this. But himself out to Shmai v'avtalyon, lifturim minei the Kohen Gadol. In the end, Shmai v'avtalyon came to the Kohen Gadol and they greeted him and thanked him for the service. Amar lahen, so the Kohen Gadol was a little upset, and he told them, Yesen b'nei amamin l'shlom. Shmai Naftali, the Gemara tells us, were descendants of Gerim, of converts. So he kind of insulted them. He says, let the son of the let the sons of nations, meaning let the sons of non-Jews, let them come in peace. And I was kind of was upset that the people left him and went to Shmai Naftali, and so he said, you know, I'm greater than you, because I come from Aaron and Kohen, and you are Gerim. Amar lahen, so they told him, Yesen b'nei amamin l'shlom d'ov d'nuv d'dahara. V'lo yesen b'aron l'shlom d'lo over d'dahara. So they told him, you know, you may be right. We are sons of Gerim. But we really didn't have to come to you because we are greater than you. Because the Talmud Chacham is greater than the Kohen Gadol. But why did we come to greet you? Because we did what Aaron did. Aaron HaKohen, his midah, was Oev Shalom v'Rodev Shalom. He was a person always looking to make Shalom between people, to take away the rift between people. So we, although we're not from sons of Aaron, but we went out of our way to behave like Aaron. And you could be a descendant of Aaron, but you didn't exactly behave like Aaron HaKohen. So that's a little lesson over here. Again, this was an early Kohen Gadol because of the days of Shmai and Avtalyon, not so late. But the lesson, you know, this is the Avoda. But it's not only that, it's also to follow in the footsteps of Aaron HaKohen as he was Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. May we be Zocher in the very near future to see the Avoda again in the Beis HaMikdash with the righteous Kohanim who follow in the footsteps of Aaron HaKohen.